It's time for your morning pep talk with Jenna Barr and the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
On News Radio 92.3 at AM 1620. Mike Wiggins, how's it going?
Hey, good morning, Davis. How are you doing, bud?
Man, I'm doing well. You and I were just talking off air how Jenna is coming back tomorrow, so I get to do this for one more day.
Well,
and I think my voice would be very grateful for that.
Well, I will say this, though. You have done a great job, and I'm kind of keeping count over here. Let's say you did four radio shows yesterday. Am I correct?
I did four radio shows yesterday.
Four radio shows. My goodness gracious. That is a lot of work. Good for you.
Oh,
you sound good.
It's all a day's effort.
Absolutely.
All good.
I hear you. Well, here we are in the first of week of June, if you will, and we are still dry. I had hoped for, really, if we're going to rain, let's have an all-day rain. But at my house, I didn't get very much at all. A little bit at night, but not enough. So just because we got a little rain, none of us, including myself, can't neglect keeping our lawn irrigated, keeping our plants irrigated, and of course what happens, especially with some of our plant choices that we have put in containers, some dry out much quicker than others. For example, I really enjoy what are called sun patiens now, which are sun-loving impatiens. The old word for it is New Guinea impatiens. Some people may relate to that. The point is, you can water it in the morning, and if you get the hot weather and a good wind, and it's in a container that, is not really large, you can have that thing drooping by 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So you've just got to water that particular plant more than others. And there are other plants like that. There's some plants that, they're fine. They really enjoy a little dry weather, not to dry out completely. But you have to kind of watch your plants. And like we talked about last week, find yourself a signal plant. Find yourself a plant in your yard that tends to dry out first. And when that one is showing signs of drying out first, go ahead and just water everything. It's like watering your lawn. People say, well, how do I know? Well, one thing is if you walk on your lawn or if you put your lawnmower going over your yard and it leaves indentations, not in the soil, just the grass lays down a little bit, then you know you need to water it. And also, if you have like St. Augustine grass and it's too dry, it will literally fold up from that center seam, if you will. When that happens, that's when you need to water. However, in this dry weather, I think getting on a schedule at least three times a week for a half hour to 45 minutes, some people I know are watering almost every day. And when we start getting some rain, we can back off of that. But for now, let's protect our plants and our lawn from the dryness. That's one thing we can do.
You know, I have some family that just came in town, or actually future in-laws, I should say, but they will be family. I consider them family already. They're from San Diego and southern Utah, respectively, and vegetation is just not great. You know, growing grass out there, most people have gravel yards, all of
right,
that.
Exactly.
And so when they came here, they were amazed by how green everything was. Because I think for two of them, it was their first time ever here in Florida. Mm-hmm. And the mom has been here a handful of times. But they were just like, man, it's just so green compared to where they come from. They live in southern Utah right now. So that's where, it's kind of like Southern California. You know, not too much vegetation. It's pretty
exactly.
Brown. A lot of desert areas and whatnot. So they were amazed when they saw, even on the beach, there was grass.
Exactly. It's really funny you mentioned that. I had a conversation with someone at a Fiesta event the other night, and they had spent a lot of time out in Phoenix. And I said, would you like to live in Phoenix? And they said, use just the words you did. They said, no, it's just too brown. He said, there's no green grass out there. It's all Brown. Now, Phoenix is a great place to live, I understand, but I can understand what they're saying because we are green. Now, a lot of people from those areas don't like our humidity. They don't like some of the bugs we have here. We have all those things. But still, I'll take Pensacola, thank you.
So actually, we have a grass-related question, and I'm going to follow this up with a grass question of my own. But first, with the text, is it too late to plant grass right now?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Matter of fact, it's a great time to plant grass. The sod is should be able to get good quality sod. You want to buy sod, of course, that's nice and green, has no weeds, has a nice base to it. Soil and not just skimmed off the top when they cut that sod. But oh yeah, it's a great time to do it. But keep in mind, we've always said this on the Garden Line, that it's 100% of the battle. Well, that's too much of a percent. Maybe 50 or 60% of the battle is preparation. If you're going to put down sod, you've got to turn it, you've got to rake it, you got to get the weeds out, you got to get it level, you got to get it soft, you want to water it. If you put it down St. Augustine, you may want to put down a little lime first, then lay your sod. You can't just buy sod and just throw it out there on top of old, dead, grassy areas. You just can't do that. Preparation means you're going to be successful. And if you're building a new home, for example, please put in your budget a sprinkler system. I think we've all found that you just have got to have one in Pensacola to be successful. You can string your hoses and your sprinklers out there in a way that will cover you. But boy, a sprinkler system just makes it so much easier than watering by hand, no doubt about it.
So to sort of follow up that question, I'm curious. I went parasailing over the weekend.
Oh, did you?
Completely
really?
Unrelated to
what I was just going to say, what does that have to do with your lawn? Davis?
Well, the company that we went parasailing at, they had laid out in the front, it used to just be all sand.
Right.
And then they recently did some work, they put some pavement out there, and they put in some St. Augustine grass in the front, which made me wonder, you know, if I were to live out on the beach, I love grass. I would want to install like some grass in the front yard. I know it's not naturally going to arrive on the beach. So what would be the best grass if I were to live on the beach and would want to install grass out there? What would be the best grass to install on sandy surfaces?
They did the right thing.
St. Augustine.
St. Augustine, there's no question. I have some friends that live kind of in Sabine. And they have some of the prettiest St. Augustine you would ever want. It's absolutely gorgeous. Now, you know what you've got to do, because sand is just going to suck up that water. It's just going to all go through. So once again, you got to have just a world-class sprinkler system to get plenty of water to it. Also, what my friends do out there, they have such pretty grass. They really pay attention to the fertilization. A high nitrogen fertilizer in the spring. April, even May, latter part of June. Now, we were going to talk about this later, but this is important. The latter part of this month and even the first of next month, if you have St. Augustine, whether it's in your yard or even at the beach, you really need to fertilize in mid-season with St. Augustine. And then come back in the fall and use your winterizer and do all of those things. But yeah, St. Augustine is good. Now, one problem you've got at the beach is storms, high tide, salt water. If it's really undulated with salt water, you can easily have some problems. And we all know the other problems that St. Augustine has, and that's why a lot of people maybe have gone to Zoysia, not necessarily at the beach, but in their residential home here in Pensacola, is that you've got the brown patch fungus, the take-all fungus, chinch bugs, sod webworms. Those type of things are still going to be problems with St. Augustine that you're going to have to face. But if you're planting grass at the beach, one, it will work, and two, use St. Augustine. And as the first caller asked, now's a great time to do it.
So 437-1620, 850-437-1620, that's the phone number if you want to be a part of the conversation, if you have a question or a comment for our gardening expert here, Mike Wiggins. We do have a text. We'll go ahead and get to this right now before we take our break. This texter says, I discovered these strange orange beetle-looking insects all over my brick mailbox, which is right next to a crepe myrtle that has a gray cast on some of the leaves. How should I treat this, and what are these bugs?
Sounds like if it's an orange bug, especially with orange stripes, that's very common. It's called a spittle bug. And you do find spittle bugs on shrubbery, and you also find them in the yard. In my opinion, they do minimal damage compared to some of the other varmints we deal with here. That's a spittle bug. And a spittle bug can be handled, if it's on shrubbery, with any of your basic shrub insecticides. Just spray them and go for it. Now, the crepe myrtle may be something different. That could be mites on there, or it could be a little fungus on there, sort of like roses get, kind of like a powdery mildew. Sometimes you'll get that on a crepe myrtle. So you need to figure out, one, if it's a fungus or if it's an insect affecting the crepe myrtle, and then treat accordingly with a fungicide or a insecticide. If we had a picture of it, we might be able to tell here. But however, on the spittle bugs, just your basic insecticide. And you can put out an insecticide, granular or liquid, on your lawn if you want to control them. But I really think, quite frankly, spittle bugs do minimal damage. What one thing you can always tell if it's a spittle bug is look in your yard, and it looks like, in some spots, like somebody spit in your yard, hence the name.
The spittle bug.
There you go. So that's probably what we're dealing with. Right.
Good questions to start off the show.
Appreciate
so far.
It. This is great.
And keep them coming. That number, 850-437-1620. We're going to take a quick timeout. We'll be right back with The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. On the Pensacola Expert Panel. It is The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. And we've had a number of questions come in this morning so far, and feel free to join in on the conversation at 850-437-1620. And Mike, we actually just received a picture of
very interesting.
I've never heard of this, but variegated St. Augustine grass.
I had heard, but I never even seen a picture of it, much less seen it in person. But it's very interesting. It's St. Augustine blade of grass, but it is has white and green, a variegated look to it. It's just, matter of fact, it is variegated, kind of reminiscent of Aztec grass, if you will, which is, matter of fact, we planted some out in front of the station. Brand new landscape out there. It looks great. And this has a similar look to it. I would love to talk to Paul to see, as a landscaper, I know he does this and he's an expert, in what situation would you want to use this? I do like, insofar as the Aztec grass. Now, Aztec grass is kind of a monkey grass, if you will, similar, but it's variegated. And it's great to plant that because it's permanent, but yet it gives you a little bit of color contrast in your landscape. Everything is not green. So this variegated St. Augustine is really kind of cool, and I would love to see it in person. I saw Paul one time working on a landscape job for a good friend of mine, and it just turned out beautiful. But there was some variegated loropetalum. Now, loropetalum, most people know, comes a couple of ways. One comes dwarf and it comes a tall growing. Just a red foliage. Very fast grower, very hardy here in Pensacola. Loropetalum. Well, Paul had a variegated loropetalum that I had never seen before and had a different look to it. So this just shows that in the horticulture industry, there are some unbelievable things going on. You find plants that you've never seen before. I look at the leopard plant. You remember us talking about the leopard plant?
I do.
The tractor seat plant. That was my words. But it's a leopard plant, which, golly, 5 years ago, maybe even less, you just never saw it. Some of the ornamental grasses way back in the day, in the 70s and 80s, you really never, you saw pampas grass, but you never saw the muley grass and some of those other grasses. So things change in the horticulture industry just like they do in other industries. And a variegated St. Augustine looks very interesting. Now, just like other initiatives and other businesses, some work and some don't work. They don't. So it'd be interesting to see if this takes off and is used in landscaping here in Pensacola. just as the leopard plant and some of these ornamental grasses are used. That's why, you know, horticulture is a very interesting business, and you never, ever can learn it all. There's no question about it, because there's just so much to it. But it's always fun to see these new things come about.
So we actually had a text message. It was actually a picture of the person who has those orange-looking bugs around their mailbox by the crepe myrtles.
Yes.
They sent in a picture, and they said, not sure if these are spittle bugs. And now if I look at them, and Mike, I'll get this picture up for you so you can get an idea. These look like orange ladybugs for me.
Could be. That easily could be. And you sure don't want to mess with them. They are beneficial. Absolutely. You don't want to spray anywhere near where they are. That's for sure. That's easily what it could be. I kind of thought about that, but I kind of went towards with the spittle bug, but it could easily be a ladybug, which takes care of other varmints that you don't want. So, save them, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I always liked ladybugs because they're pretty looking.
They're beneficial, so let's don't mess with them.
850-437-1620, that's the phone number, Mike. If you want to be a part of the conversation, call or text.
No doubt about it. Davis, a couple things that observations. I'm driving and walking around my neighborhood. I don't know if I have ever seen such a show of agapanthus in my life in Pensacola. I don't know why they're so all of a sudden so beautiful this year. They bloom every year, but this year they seem to be everywhere. And in my neighborhood, for example, who knew that so many people had planted agapanthus, lily of the Nile, if you will. And I bet you everybody listening has seen this in the last week or so, sending up the long stalks with the blue flower at the top. We used to have them out front here, and they were really very, very pretty. But agapanthus is such a great plant, and I have planted it mainly. Well, I love the blooms because I enjoy those, but they'll go away. The foliage is nice, and it puts up with some cold weather. It's kind of a strap-like foliage. Doesn't grow too tall. Very hardy plant. Doesn't get too many insects or diseases, that type of thing. But if you're doing some landscaping, agapanthus is a great choice, and you get this wonderful early summer show of blue color. Now, there are other colors, but the blue is the one that you see in most neighborhoods around Pensacola. Absolutely gorgeous. And also, Davis, the crepe myrtles are, of course, blooming now. Just kind of starting to really show a lot of color. And this is why I always recommend to people, if you're going to plant crepe myrtles, this is a great time to buy them, because you know what you're going to get. So many times over the years, people have come to me and said, Mike, I want a crepe myrtle, and I want a watermelon red crepe myrtle, which is a beautiful one. It's very common. But, of course, when you plant it in the winter and it's dormant, sometimes you're not exactly sure what you're getting. A lot of companies will just label a crepe myrtle red. Well, there are different shades of red and pinkish red, and you have white and lavender and all those. And nothing was worse than to plant a line of crepe myrtles, and you have red, red, white, red, red, red. You know, you want to be sure you have the right ones. So to be 100% sure, buy and plant a crepe myrtle now, because you know what color. Let it bloom, and you know exactly what color you're getting. I had the same experience this spring planting them, some hibiscus. I love my hibiscus. And they have just gone crazy. But I wanted a yellow one. And I bought it pretty early, and it was just labeled yellow. I said, good, it's exactly what I want. Well, now the blooms are kind of a yellow orange with a big orange splotch in the middle, which is fine. It's beautiful. I'm enjoying it. But it's not the yellow one, because sometime until they bloom, you really never know what you're getting.
So we actually have a fun text in here, and I'll read it right after this break before we go into Fox and local news. We'll take that break right now on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Does he love me? I want to know. How can I tell if he loves me so? Is it in his eyes?
Welcome back to The Garden Line on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Now, Mike, we have about a minute to answer this. The question is, and we could always roll this over, but what three flower/plants together make a nice red, white, and blue landscape?
Oh, well, red, we could spend a lot of time on this. Okay, we can do red, white, and blue. Okay, let's do the hard one first, the blue. Ageratum is a beautiful plant, an annual. Ageratum. Blue Days is a nice perennial that one can plant. Those are two that just jump into my mind. The white ones, almost anything. Periwinkle, for example. Petunias. A white crepe myrtle is nice. A lot of white plants. Red, here we go. You ready? Okay, I'm going to rattle off what jumps in my mind here. Do we have time for this? Yeah. All right. Hibiscus. Knockout roses. Just New Guinea impatiens. Those sun impatiens in red are phenomenal. A Thai plant is good. That would be great. Let's see what else. Well, how about one of my favorite plants, caladiums? One called Buck, B-U-C-K. It's a red one. So those are just some red, white, and blue thoughts that jump into my mind. I'd love to hear what the audience has, because I'm sure they have a lot they could add to my list. So after the break, let's do that.
And we can get to those after the break. But first, hey, Mark, what do you have coming up? Welcome back to The Garden Line on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. And Mike, we've had a handful of texts come in since the Fox and local news break. One of them involves a few pictures. Now, this one, they're curious about a particular kind of grass. Now, the picture itself, it's obviously green, and it seems to be very long. But the question is, what is this invasive grass? Last year, we had about 10 three-bladed, or in quotations, clumps. This year, despite efforts, I have at least 50 now. It grows in a three-bladed group, gets to 1 foot, no problem, and it does not pull up easily. Instead, it breaks off at the ground. Tap way down between regular plants. Mowing does not solve this issue. Blades have slightly sharp side edges. This was not here on this 80-year-old property ever. So they're curious what kind of grass this is. How can we do away with it?
Let's deal with what it is first.
Sure thing.
And obviously it is classified as a grassy weed. It doesn't bloom. It's not broadleaf. It's a grassy weed. I don't think there's any mystery to that. Exactly the name of this grass, I can't help you. I don't know. It's just, you know, from the picture, it is a grassy weed. There's no doubt about that. Now, what do you do about it? That's the key. Number one, from the picture, I can't tell exactly where it is. But if you're going to kill grassy weeds permanently, there is a solution. But this is a solution that everybody who wants to do this has got to think very hard if you want to do it or not. And that's using glyphosate. Glyphosate comes under the trade name Roundup. Now, if you are on the internet, you've seen all kinds of problems or potential problems, litigation and such with Roundup. My advice to people when they say, should I use Roundup, is one, I'm not one to give that advice. You really have to make up your own mind on that. Do all the research you can. Read the label top to bottom. That is so critical. And whenever I use Roundup, and I try to use it as little as I can, but sometimes you almost have to, I dress the part. I dress like a Martian. I wear my swim goggles. I wear a mask, sometimes two masks, long sleeve shirt, long pants, socks, a pair of shoes that I just kind of keep in my garage just for that. And it will kill it. It'll kill it dead as a doornail, and it'll do it all, not overnight, but very, very quickly, and it'll kill it down to the roots. But it is a product that is controversial, and certainly we here on the Garden Line are not one to give advice on that. You have to consider yourself. Children, pets, I would certainly not use it. Anywhere where they go. I just wouldn't do it. I think the label might say you can. I don't know. But I do know that I wouldn't do it. So you can kill this particular invasive grass. Now, to keep it from coming back, if it's in a flower bed, for example, you can put out some pre-emergence, some preen, some of the granular pre-emergence weed preventer, if you will, which will help inhibit future grassy weeds from coming up. but you got to get rid of it first. Digging is another option, not one that you may want to do, but you got to get the roots and all. Because if you try to pull it up and it breaks off, it's just going to come right back. So that's a tough problem, a very difficult problem to deal with. A lot of decisions to be made personally as to what you want to do about it.
So this one I hear more lately is a big issue. I have yet to experience this issue, and I really hope I never have to. But moles. I know this has been brought up lately, Mike.
Oh, let me tell you, it has. I think I mentioned to Jenna. Maybe I mentioned it to you too, Davis. Back in the day, we were doing a weekly show on Blab Television. We did it for years, and you really had fun with it. And if you had to analyze that particular television show, the number one question, moles. What do I do about moles? So, here goes. Number one, I think moles are not eating your grass or your flowers. They're after insects. And that's why they're making those runs, which kind of dig up the turf. And when they dig up the turf, they disturb the roots, and the grass starts drying out. It then turns brown, and that's the damage that you're seeing. So how do you get rid of them? One, I think putting a granular insecticide out is not a bad idea to control the insects, not necessarily the moles, but the insects. That's a good way to do it. You can also buy little mole pellets. They look like little green marbles that you can put out in the runs and take care of them that way. None of them are perfect because, as we always said, if you live in a neighborhood that has homes under construction or you just live near a wooded area, the moles, they're going to go where the insects are. And if they happen to be in your yard, that's where they're going to come. But this is the fun part about that question, because we talked about this last week. Sorry to repeat myself, but there are a lot of home remedies to get rid of moles. Juicy fruit gum, wad it up,
wow,
put it in the run. And here's one that's crazy. A lock of hair, human hair, in the run will discourage the moles. Now, these are probably old wives' tales. They probably don't work. But people have been so desperate to get rid of moles and have not had a real solution that these crazy things come up insofar as how to control them. It's in all seriousness, a difficult problem to control.
I'm just thinking about the guy who came up with juicy fruit gum as a solution to get rid of moles.
Oh, yeah. Like, the same guy says, Davis, he says, wear gloves because you don't want a human scent on it. Wear gloves when you roll it up and put it in. But so I don't know if that's true or not. But it's kind of fun to talk about. It's not fun if you've got them. But one other thing you can do is if you see a run in your yard, tamp it back down and water extra in that area. And let's see if those roots that mole has disturbed, see if those roots regenerate and come back.
This is sort of going back to the red, white, and blue question, but Paul from Blue Sky Landscaping does chime in saying, ageratum, am I pronouncing this
ageratum.
Right? Ageratum, thank you. He mentioned that that's one of his favorite blues to plant.
That is a great blue plant. It's a low plant. It's not a big, tall plant, but it really is a pretty plant, no doubt about it. But the reds are so many, many reds. I just look at my yard. The red hibiscus are blooming better than any I've ever seen. I don't know what environmental condition other than the cool spring and being watered a lot. They are great. The knockout roses, of course, you want red. They are great. These New Guinea impatiens, these sun patiens, everybody is really selling those. Every garden center you go to, the front rack has got these New Guinea impatiens. Those are the ones that are gorgeous, but the ones that take extra water. No doubt about it. And then one I didn't mention a minute ago, but we mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I really like, that is so underused, is Ixora. I love the common name of Ixora. Jungle Flame.
Jungle Flame.
Jungle
wow.
Flame. That's Ixora. Low-growing plant. It comes in red, orange, yellow, whatever. I've got one I planted with orange, and it is, for lack of a better word, bulletproof. It loves the sun. It's a tropical, it's kind of a subtropical plant, but it's a great one. And so you might want to look into that.
850-437-1620. Before we take our next break, we do have a text that just came in, Mike. So they say, I want to take a striper from Star Jazz and get it to grow so I can plant it for another year. How do I do this? It also is spelled STRIPPER, so that also spells stripper.
Does spell stripper, yeah.
From Star Jazz and get it to grow so I can plant it for another year. How do I do this?
I think they probably want to take some cuttings off of it. That would be my...
That's probably true.
You know, clip off some cuttings. How do I do that? Well, I have never tried to take cuttings off a Star Jazz. That's a Star Jasmine they're talking about,
okay.
I think. They abbreviated it, but I think that's what they mean. And propagating that would be where you would take your cuttings, probably take them in the early spring, put them in some potting mixture, very light, maybe some soil with some perlite in it, get them started, get them rooted, and then kind of bump them up to a bigger pot, then a bigger pot, then a bigger pot. I'm not sure I'm answering the question because I'm not sure exactly if I'm getting the question right. But that's how I would approach it.
Well, good deal. And hey, if anybody else has questions out there and they want to get the answers to it, feel free to just go ahead and chime in. You can also call, by the way, at 850-437-1620. We'll take our final time, or not quite our final time out. We will have another one, but we will take this time out at 9:45 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Garden Line on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. And we had a nice text in here. Mike, I'm sure you would agree that daylilies, they're blooming nicely in Pensacola.
Oh, they really are. And I'll tell you, Davis, daylilies are one of the greatest perennials we have in our area. You know, so many different varieties. One of my favorites is one called a Stella Dell'Ora, which is a dwarf, if you will, a lower-growing daylily. Thing about daylilies, one, there is a daylily society, daylily club here in Pensacola that is very active. But daylilies are so much fun because they really will grow. You need to fertilize them with a good blooming plant fertilizer. They love the sun, and there's so many different kinds. One thing about daylilies I like, if you have a neighbor that comes over to your house and says, man, that daylily is gorgeous. I wish I could buy one like that. Don't let them buy one. Wait till November, and then you could take that daylily and separate it and keep the one for yourself and give one to your neighbor for Christmas. I know we're a little early to talk about a Christmas list here, but point is you can divide those and have many more daylilies as they get bigger and bigger. I always kind of couple that, and they really aren't related, but as some of our favorite perennials here in Pensacola. Of course, we love the Gerber daisies. And Gerber daisies will bloom beautifully in the spring, and then they'll bloom again in the fall. But one thing you've got to be careful is that Gerber daisies, like all plants, the mulch might build up around it. You might get dirt, what they call in the crown of it. And if you do that, it's really not going to bloom too well. So you need to be sure that crown of that plant right at ground level is clear, so those Gerbers will bloom again in the fall. But those are two of the greatest perennials for our areas, Gerber daisies and daylilies, and especially those daylilies. We don't talk enough about them, but if you put daylilies in the sun, put it in the front of a bed, say of your permanent shrubs, it gives you color for a long time.
And I've always been a big fan of those daylilies.
Oh, yeah.
Just so nice.
Great. Oh, yeah, they really are. They really are. I'm going to backtrack for just a second to our phone call we got about the sample off the Star Jasmine. One thing I didn't mention is if you're going to take cuttings, a product you need to buy, which will give you some instructions on that, is called Rootone. So Rootone comes in a little packet. It's a powder. And what you do, you would take your cutting, you dip it in the Rootone, then you put it into your very light soil, if you will. It's a hormone that makes the roots grow. That's what you want. That's why they call it Rootone. But that's a product, if you're going to take cuttings off of anything, that's something you've just got to have.
Perfect. So, and that's, I remember when I was much younger, we had a garden club, and that was one of the things we tried, was taking a sample of another plant and try planting it. And unfortunately, in this case, we started to get something, but it died off.
Yeah.
It just didn't catch.
Well, and that's something you need to realize, of course, that a lot of plants like camellias, citrus, if you will, have been grafted. They haven't been propagated by taking cuttings. They've been grafted onto a root system that will help it thrive. And that's what was mainly roses, or mainly all grafted. As a matter of fact, if you buy a rose, there's a little golf ball size area right there, right by the soil level. You need to keep that above the soil level. That's where it's been grafted. No doubt about it.
Now, I have a fruit-related question, because, you know, you go all around Central and South Florida, you'll find orange fields and strawberry fields, a lot of them. I know in my grandparents' yard in Tallahassee, they had a lemon tree that produced some really good lemons. I'm curious, in the Pensacola area, what fruit is best produced over here?
Well, you can grow lemons, and I tell you what has been just unbelievable the last couple of years, a grapefruit here in Pensacola. You can really grow them, but Meyer lemons are a really a good one, and a lot of the citrus will do here. Sometimes it's all predicated on the cold weather, because you know, Davis, from coming down in South and Central Florida, that the citrus industry kind of has moved south. It just got devastated by cold weather. And it moved, literally, a lot of the orange groves have moved south. So there are many citrus varieties that will do good here. There really are. And a lot of people love to grow them. I've got some friends that just grow all different kinds. They grow them in containers, a lot of them do. And it's got to be a big container, but they grow them in containers and just have all kinds of citrus here in Pensacola. So it can be done. You just have to be careful in the winter on some varieties of being sure you protect it.
Now, I'm starting to laugh as I say this, because I have a cousin who has dabbled in winemaking.
Okay.
And it's probably the most atrocious thing I've ever tasted. But I don't know of anybody here locally. Well, I do know of one. That, you know, local winemakers, they grow their own grapes here. Is there an opportunity to grow healthy wine grapes here?
Well, you can grow, you know, Scuppernong wine is very prevalent here in the Panhandle, and a lot of winemakers use that. But the wines that you can get up in Napa Valley,
yes,
no, some of those you can't grow those grapes here. They just don't do. We just don't have the climate. It's too warm. We don't have the soil. It's just not going to grow here. But yeah, you can make you some Scuppernong wine, Davis. There are all kind of kits out there that will tell you how to do that.
I'm scared. I'm really scared, Mike.
Don't be scared.
If somebody were to make it and say, Davis, just give it a try, you'll like it. You know what? Sure, why not? I'm open-minded like that. But my brother is a sommelier, and he said, you know, some of the best wine in the world you'll find out in France in this tiny, tiny patch of land.
Right.
That's, it's so small, but that's where someone identified, this is the place right here, this little patch of land. And they produce some of the world's best wine.
Exactly.
So it's funny how it sometimes takes a worldwide search to find the best soil, the best land to produce a product.
And
like
you probably don't want to ask the price of the bottle of wine that comes out of that patch of land.
I don't need to ask. I'm not buying it because I can't afford it. I just already know I can't afford it.
No, I can tell you right now, it's just going to be out of sight. Now, when you go between here and Tallahassee, you and I have made that trip
many times.
There's a winery there near the Funiac Springs.
I've always wanted to try them.
Yeah, you ought to stop and get it. I bet you it's some Scuppernong wine, but I don't know that. It may be something different. But I've never stopped there either. But it's looks like a going concern. It's been there for years.
It's into Funiac, so that's a nice little day trip. Why not?
Why not?
Make a nice little day trip.
Absolutely.
One of these days. In the meantime, though, we'll talk about our day trip during the break. We will take a quick timeout. You're listening to The Garden Line on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Garden Line on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Our friend Catherine Mike sharing a picture of her tiger lilies looking really good. She says they're starting to bloom.
Let me tell you what. Catherine is the best.
She is.
She's got the greenest thumb of anyone you would ever want to meet. And I can't tell her or our audience how much I appreciate her participating in our show. She's always there, and we always get fun things from her. And Catherine, thanks, and congratulations on the tiger lily. That sounds fun to me. Never grown a tiger lily, but if anybody can do it, Catherine can. There's no doubt about it.
Without a doubt. And it looks like she's doing a really good job of that. So keep the pictures coming. And we'll do it again next week. However, I'll be in the building, of course. But Jenna Barr will be back with us, Mike. So it's been fun.
Davis, it is always fun being with you. Thanks for being here.
Of course. And stick around. Winning with Mainstay Financial with Bob Burgi and Annalee Leonard. That's coming up next on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.